in a peaceful planet? Are you interested in optimal health? Are you living with purpose? Are you enjoying your life? We realize each person can make a difference, and our mission is to empower your awareness. The choices that you make in every moment shape your life, and we encourage you to realize that you have your own answers and to always listen to your own truth. We invite you to stay aware. Good afternoon and welcome to the Aware Show. Hi, this is Lisa Garr. And so let me ask you a question. What would it mean to you if you actually knew, really truly knew, that you could reverse disease, redefine aging, alter reality? What about those types of things? Those types of discoveries in physics are actually being tested in laboratories as we speak. Tons and tons of bodies of research are being done around this now in research studies, double-blind studies. All of this science is available now, mostly online because it's so new. And now in Greg Braden's book, The Spontaneous Healing of Belief, Shattering the Paradigm of False Limits. This is a phenomenal book. Mind-opening. Just get a ratchet right now and just crank your brain open because this conversation is going to inspire you. Welcome to the show, Greg Braden.
Hey, Lisa. It is great to be here, and it's a pleasure to hear your voice. I get to speak with you twice within the same quarter of the same year.
So I know.
That's a rare event for us.
And I know, and I've been wanting to call you, too, because I'm still immersed in these papers, and I'm like, wait, Greg knows about this, and I keep referencing your books on various things. Do you just put 24/7 into writing these books?
You know, it's just about.
A lot of research in here.
It's interesting. About 22 years ago, when I was working in the defense industry as a software engineer, I began putting this information together, and I thought, well, we can do this as one really big book that nobody's ever going to read, or we could break this into logical segments that apply to our time in history. And I've been blessed with publishers like Random House, now Hay House, that have really worked with me to do that. So while each book is very different from the others and stands on its own, they all dovetail with one another and kind of pick up where the previous one leaves off.
Well, that makes sense, because I'm like, when did you just came out with another book. When did you have time to write this one?
Airplanes.
Okay. I got it. I know.
Yeah.
I'm working on expanding that 24-hour day myself. Okay, so in the concept, people have heard this concept, if you change your belief, you change your reality. If you change your belief about something, you change your reality.
Yes.
What does this mean in your terms?
Well, I've heard that as well, and I heard it. I heard it throughout my childhood in a very conservative community in the Midwest in northern Missouri. I've heard it in the New Age community, and while I wanted to believe that if we change our beliefs, something happens, I was never really convinced that that was the case. And the reason, Lisa, is because belief was never really well defined for me. It was this kind of nebulous, you're thinking about some things and you're having a feeling and some certainty about some things. But you know, I couldn't really get a good handle on what that was all about. And it wasn't until beginning in 1986 when I began exploring many of the principles that we've talked about in your programs before through other cultures and the way that the traditions are preserved in some of their most ancient and cherished spiritual traditions, their texts. And we began spending time in monasteries in Egypt on the Sinai Peninsula, Bolivia, Peru, and India, Nepal, and certainly through the Tibetan Plateau, where it was during that time that I really began to understand that there is a wisdom that is held in these ancient traditions that we have largely forgotten in our everyday world in the West. And at the same time, our scientists are pointing to precisely the principles of our relationship to the world that these traditions have always suggested.
Well, the word forgotten is nice, because wasn't it originally edited out of the early Christian text?
Absolutely, and this is what makes it so interesting. So many of the things that, you know, I was raised and conditioned to believe that we live in this pinnacle of a society and the highest level of technology and sophistication ever achieved by humankind. And while we live in a very cool world and we do have some very cool technology out there, what I've found is that 5,000, 6,000, 7,000 years ago, there was a very cool technology in this world as well, but it was so sophisticated that people didn't need a lot of outer gadgets to make it work. It was all about what was happening inside of their bodies. And lo and behold, where all of this comes together, it was all about our inner experience of thought, feeling, emotion, and belief. And so this brings us right back to the science. Within just the last couple of years, Lisa, modern scientists have found that belief is actually something that happens in the human heart. And the reason that this is such a powerful piece of information, if people are listening to this show, I am certain that they know the basic science that tells us our world is made of electrical and magnetic energy, electromagnetic waves. We've all heard that before.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
If you want to change our world, somehow we've got to change electrical and magnetic waves. That makes perfect sense. Where this becomes really interesting is we now understand that our heart is the strongest generator of electrical and magnetic fields in the human body.
Right, there's a whole electrical system in the body.
There is an electrical system in the body, and our brain does create electrical fields. They're relatively weak, and magnetic fields, they're relatively weak. And that's what thoughts are all about. So when we create a thought in our brain, it's a relatively weak electrical and magnetic field. However, when we marry that thought with our love for what we're thinking, then it moves that pattern of energy directly into our hearts. And our hearts are about 100 times stronger than our brains electrically, and up to 5,000 times stronger than our brains magnetically. So when we feel and believe in our hearts, we are literally, this isn't a metaphor and it's not wishful thinking, we are literally creating the waves and the patterns, the templates of the very stuff our bodies and our universe is made of, and we're giving it new information.
Well, I mean, coming from you, who was a computer systems analyst for Cisco, and all of the background that you have in computer geology, which I didn't even know it was a field.
Well, it was a new field.
Ah.
At that time, this was in the late 70s during the energy crisis when they were rationing our gas, and we were frantically searching for new energy sources.
Wow. Okay. So with that being your background of, you know, I don't know, 30, 40 years.
Yikes.
Sorry about that.
That's all right.
Okay. A couple of decades.
That's
so
okay.
Then
I'm on the 200-year plan, so that was in the first 50 years of my 200-year lifespan.
I thought it was 50. I was actually being nice. Sorry about that. But the with that, so what you're saying is that the brain has an electromagnetic field, the body has an electromagnetic field. If the brain sends messages through that electromagnetic field to the body of healing, changing, believing, it actually does work. But Greg, does it change the cellular structure?
Absolutely. And this is what's so interesting. And all of this, the things, we're just kind of jumping around and touching on different topics in the new book, and this is all documented with the references if people like to find out more about this information.
I want you to get into that, too, the studies. It's important, yeah.
Sure, but one of the things, the University of Turin in Turin, Italy, interestingly enough, where the Shroud of Turin happens to be in the church there, the university scientists in 2004 documented for the first time that when we feel and when we believe that our body is being healed, it's more, and the body actually responds, that it is more than just a psychological effect. What they did was they were able to actually scan the brain cells of living humans, when they believed that they had received something that would heal their bodies or relieve their pain, even though in reality they had received only saline solution. This is called the placebo effect.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And what they found is when they scanned the brain, to their amazement, their brain cells actually changed and altered as if the chemical they believed they had were physically in their body, and it wasn't there. They were astonished, and that's the reason that the papers were published. It's the first time that the effect of human belief has been documented on the cellular, single-cell level, with the neurons in the brain, in this case, actually acting as if they had received a chemical mimicking dopamine that would relieve the pain in these people.
Now,
so it's more than just a psychological effect. Our body, in other words, is almost as if what we believe about ourselves is more important than what is actually taking place.
Now, I understand that, and I learned this through one of the DVDs that you recently had out with Louise Hay's DVD. Did you cure your own tumor using this?
Well, there's can I share the story so that the whole background is there? I believe in the documentary. You know, it's interesting when you do an interview for a documentary like that, you never really know how much of it's going to make it in the documentary and in what context. And
Okay. It's
a beautiful film. They did a wonderful job, and there were bits and pieces that were kind of edited. And you and I have spoken about this on the program many times. I've got an amazing piece of video documentation, a film from a medicineless hospital in Beijing, China.
Oh, I've seen this video, yes,
at one of
your lectures. Yes.
It's the same one where through an ultrasound we can look into the body of a living woman who has an inoperable tumor in her bladder by Western medical standards. And while we're watching on this video in real time, in about 2 minutes and 40 seconds, in response to something that three practitioners are doing, that tumor disappears. And it's a very potent, graphic, powerful way to illustrate in a live audience just how powerful our beliefs and our feelings are, that we can change a woman's reality, and the human body responds in less than 3 minutes from a life-threatening condition to being healed.
Now, so, what were the practitioners were chanting, right?
What they were doing was they were chanting a word that reinforced a belief and a feeling within them, and the feeling was simply that the woman was already healed. They were coming from the outcome as if the tumor didn't exist, as if the woman was fully healed, fully enabled, fully capacitated. And it's such a powerful film. With permission from the gentleman that filmed it, who I studied with for a period of time, I had shown this for about 5 years through huge audiences all through Australia and Europe, some American, North American audiences, in the late 90s. So in 2000, when I went in for my physical, lo and behold, everything was fine, except my doctor said, there's something inside of your bladder, Greg, that shouldn't be there, and it needs to come out. And I thought to myself, well, you know, of course, I've been looking at this thing and having feelings about it and showing it for 5 years, and now I'm experiencing, you know, exactly what this woman had shown in the film. And I asked the doctor, I said, okay, give me a couple of weeks, let me work with this. And I had to really get clear.
My goodness.
Lisa, about what, because it was frightening. I had to get really clear about what was going on, and I said, you know, this is my opportunity to practice what I've learned in those monasteries and what I've learned from the practitioners and the texts and everything I've been sharing with everyone. And I did precisely that. I went into, I canceled all my programs, no phone calls or anything for a couple of weeks, and really worked with myself. And still, Lisa, there's this little thread of doubt that runs through our minds. Even when we believe in ourselves, we're conditioned to feel powerless. And I wanted to make certain. So I went to the Mayo Clinic in Jacksonville, Florida. I said, if I'm going to do this, I want to do it really well.
Mm-hmm.
And still underwent a medical procedure. I was anesthetized. I went into the operating room. The next thing I knew, I woke up in recovery, and the doctor was in there, and he said, why are you here? There's nothing there. There's no scar tissue, no redness. It doesn't look like anything ever was there. And they'd even taken a picture with a 360-degree camera inside my bladder to show me. He said, here's the picture. Look, there's nothing there. And of course, I was half anesthetized, and I started talking to him about medicineless hospitals and China and the power of belief as he's walking out of the room because he didn't want to hear any of that. But
at the Mayo Clinic, right?
Mayo Clinic, yeah. But the whole point, and they were good people, really, really good, very good care. But, and I wanted to be certain. I wanted to be absolutely certain that, that what I had done was effective. But the point in the film, the reason they shared this, was it was an example of shifting a perspective and then taking it to the next level. It's not enough just to shift the perspective. We've got to have the tools to know how to interact, to speak the language that the stuff of our bodies and the stuff of the universe is made of. And it's a very simple, nonverbal language of human feeling and belief. And the bottom line, we don't have to know any of this. The bottom line is simply, if we can feel from the outcome of what it is that we're choosing to experience, in this case, it was a healthy, vital body, then anything other than that changes.
Okay.
So it wasn't about the tumor. I mean, if I'd had a cold or if I'd had, allergies or whatever else that was happening. In other words, our body responds to the expectation when it is created through a heartfelt knowing and the acceptance that it's already happened rather than the brain hoping or wishing or simply stating that it's so with no energy to imbue that hope or that wish with the power to come to realization.
So you did this, and that's a phenomenal story. I really appreciate you sharing that with me because out of all that you've learned, it's almost like the universe came down and said, all right, now we're going to test you and see if you actually walk this talk. It deepened your relationship with everything, especially where it comes to this heart-based code that you're talking about just now, this heartfelt knowing. I mean, you as a scientist, it's easy, and your peers do a lot that comes from the brain and the mind and the study of the mind and so forth. But really getting into the heart, much more into the vibration of the heart, which isn't a scientific term at
right.
all.
Well, it's becoming more so. And it was so interesting to me because at first I felt like I was being tested. That's the precise language that I used. And then I realized, and I think this is true for all of us in the Western traditions, if we feel like life tests us, I mean, there's nothing wrong with feeling that way, and I don't want anyone to hear anything different than that, and I'm going to share another perspective. If we feel like life tests us, then we have the opportunity to fail. And we've all been conditioned to believe that we are insignificant beings and that we, just by being in this world, that somehow we've failed. If you subscribe to all of the doctrine of Christian literature as it's been presented to
us. That's an interesting perspective, yes.
So so rather than then looking at it as something that I could pass or fail, what I did was I looked at it as an opportunity. I said it's an opportunity for me to live and demonstrate and apply everything that I have, all the tools that I've gathered over all of these years. And it's impossible to fail something if you are simply applying what you know and doing the best you can. You can't fail until you compare it against something else. And that was an important part of the lesson for me. And it's a little piece.
It's huge
today, but I wanted to share it with our listeners. The bottom line for me was on the other side of this experience. What it did, and you hit it right on, is that it empowered me. I can look at any human in any state of health, anywhere in the world, in any language, eye to eye, heart to heart, man to man, woman to woman, God to God, and I can say to them with conviction that I know that there's a power that lives within your body because it lives within my body, and if we will honor the language of the gift that was given to us when we were born into this world, whatever it is you're dealing with right now, you will transcend, not just survive, not just meet the challenge, but you'll transcend it, become greater and stronger than that challenge.
Okay, let me ask you about, other than just physical healing things, what about physical manifestations of things? So getting a new job or a new relationship or something that's outside of your own physical healing ability, what can or money or whatnot, how do you take this type of technique and get out of, like, the trauma, physical pain, Holocaust, I mean, those types of things. Do you see what I'm saying?
Those are good questions, Lisa, and the principles are precisely the same. And this is where the science, I think, is so important. You know, we look at one, and I was just in Toronto, Canada, a couple of days ago doing presentations there, and I rode the subway system up there. And I sat in the subway, and I looked around at all the people that look around at everybody else, and everyone is bundled up in their coats, and everybody, you know, has their glasses on, their sunglasses, and feel separate from one another, and puts up the walls to make sure that that separateness is there on the one hand. And on the other hand, what I know, and I've seen this done, there are lenses that we can look through that look beyond the flesh of our physical body, and they show patterns of energy. And if we could see one another through those day in and day out, we'd see that our energy is anything but separate, that we are all intimately enmeshed and mingled. Everyone in that subway was touching one another and embedded in their energy fields.
In some way, yeah.
In some way. Mm-hmm. And it's when we can really begin to understand that, then it makes sense why creating an electrical and a magnetic field, a template, a blueprint in our heart, would have an effect beyond our bodies and can affect the success of our careers and the quality of our relationships and the manifestation of the things you're talking about, because they are made of the same patterns of energy. We're just these little bundles of energy. You know, we've heard this all before, but this is the understanding, the new understanding that the human heart creates these fields in response to belief and feeling is what changes everything. So when we have a feeling or a belief, as we learn to hone the quality of our belief language, what we're really doing is we're honing the quality of the blueprint that we're creating in the world, and the situations that we find ourselves in and day out respond to that blueprint. So the promotion, you know, that is in the ethers in our department, at our workplace, or the perfect relationship that seems to elude us day in and day out. Those things all respond to these patterns of energy, and the beauty is we don't have to really know all the technical things if we are open to seeing ourselves as part of rather than separate from our world. It makes perfect sense.
Well, it makes a lot of sense when you're in the small stuff or in the details or caught up in the doing of things and you lose sight of the really big picture of it, because you can get so much more done, as you're saying, when you what did you say? The perspective I saw was you looking from the place of being healed backwards. What was that again?
Absolutely. It's the key to everything we're saying here. If our listeners are in their cars driving in the freeway and they can't really take notes and they're saying, well, you know, what is it I can do when I turn this radio program off? The bottom line is to feel from the outcome as if our heart's desire has already come to pass, as if the prayer is already answered. And this is where the workshop begins, because as a society, we're conditioned not to feel. We're conditioned to think. So I'll see people scrunching up their eyebrows in the workshops, you know, and wrinkling their foreheads, and their veins start to pop out, and their faces get red because they're thinking really hard. Mm-hmm. And that is just the opposite of what this is all about. It's this subtle little, just this little shift, the difference between thinking that we have to make something happen and engineering all of the steps to get there, and feeling from the outcome and allowing those things to happen in our lives.
You know, I was talking to this lady who owns this dry cleaners by our house, and she works, you know, 7 or 12 hours a day, and she's in every morning at 7 and out every night by 7, and she does all the louvers herself, and she does everything on her own. And I said to her, wow, I always see you here. Don't you have anybody that can help you and so you can get a break? And she goes, oh, no, my life is hard, and I know it has always been hard, and I just have to work hard. And I'm taking care of my mother, and this is, you know, how I know how to do that. And I thought to her myself, I thought, gosh, if she could even start to look at the perspective of how it could be any different, how maybe a vacation might enter into her awareness, or maybe getting some part-time help so she's not doing all the deliveries herself or something like that, But there wasn't any permission for me to really say it. It was just more like enrolling me in the conversation of life is hard. And I mean, slowly but surely, I've gotten to know this lady, and she listens to my show now, and she's starting to get into the kind of perspective of change. I think she even has it on today. So, I mean, it's kind of the entering in of this belief system. I mean, what you're talking about, Greg Braden is my guest, and he is a computer systems geologist. He comes from this information after spending, 81 days over 4 or 5 years going to monasteries in Tibet. He has brought from this information to us from a scientific perspective. But for people who are out there who are still in the regime of, God, I don't know how to get what I want. I don't even know what I want. What does all of this mean? There's a blending of the two worlds between what Greg is talking about and what the dry cleaning lady is talking about. And the beautiful thing is that's what Greg's books are about. I mean, that's exactly what he does, is he bridges science and new thought. And it's very, very cool. So you're saying feeling from the outcome as if the desire has already been answered.
Truly feeling and giving thanks of gratitude and appreciation for what has already happened. And what you've just described, Lisa, is a beautiful example of where so many of us are, is that we must be very specific when we're having these kinds of feelings. And you said there's some people don't even know what it is that they want. And this is where a growing number of mainstream scientists and engineers are now publishing in peer-reviewed journals their ideas, their beliefs that the universe and our bodies work like computers, and this is the language that they're using, rather than computers that run on electrical circuits like we have on our desktop or our laptop. These computers they're talking about, the universe is a consciousness computer. And just as every computer has programs that it uses to get things done, our program for consciousness computers is what we call belief and feeling.
In our head.
In our hearts.
Mind. Oh, in our hearts.
And the thing is that the program can only be as effective as it is clear and concise. And the same thing happens with our feelings and our beliefs. You know, if we say, well, I want life to be better. Well, what is better? Better. I mean, it could be a nano fraction better than it was yesterday, and it's still better, but we wouldn't know that. What does better mean? Does it mean more abundance spiritually, more abundance materially, more joy? And those are the things. It's important to be very specific about what it is that we're feeling in our lives. A dear friend of mine, a brilliant teacher, and you may have had him on the show in the past. His name is Robert Tennyson Stevens. Are you familiar with his work?
No, I haven't.
He has spent a lifetime exploring what is now being called conscious languaging. And he's done it from other cultures, such as the Hopi tradition and some of the Native American traditions. The bottom line is that when we speak into the world what it is that we experience, what we want, that the universe takes that, what we've said, as a literal command, very literal, and will give us exactly what it is that we're speaking.
Is he the man that took you into the cornfield?
No, that's a different man.
Okay.
Different man. So when we think about that, now, there's a whole program we could probably do on this, but when we speak what it is that we're experiencing, if every word that we speak is a literal command to the stuff the universe is made of, if our words are mirroring what it is that we really believe in our hearts, then I'm going to invite our listeners to really think about what it is that we say every day. I ask live audiences all the time, how many people want more money or want a better relationship? You know, of course, everybody raised their hands because we want that. The word want is the catch right there. Want is an open-ended possibility. There's no closure. There's no outcome. It keeps going and going and going. So the universe can respond and say, okay, I'll let you want and want and want, and you'll never receive. Because there's no completion to the word want. When we say life is hard, that's a command to the universe. And the universe say, okay, well, then here are some more experiences so that you can see that how hard life is for you. And if we go through life with those kinds of feelings and those beliefs, when we find ourselves in a situation, we will always seem to magnetize to us the experiences that will reinforce what it is that we've just claimed. If we say life is hard, then we're always going to see a checkbook that has maybe just enough to pay the bills at the end of the month and not a penny more.
Or I never have enough money. Now, yeah. Are you saying that hope and want are validating to the universe that it is not happening?
The universe is neutral, unbiased, is what it is that what the scientists have found in their experiments and what 5,000-year-old spiritual traditions have said in non-scientific terms, that it's neutral. It simply reflects and gives back what it is that we claim to be true in our lives, allowing us to learn to hone the language that really works best for us. If we go through life for 100 years thinking that life is hard and that there isn't enough and that people are mean and somebody's always out to get us, we'll have 100 years of those kinds of experiences.
Okay.
But at some point when we realize that, okay, we know what life is like when we think it's hard, and perhaps we have actually had hard lives. I'm not saying to discount what has been true in the past, but the past is only true up until a nanosecond ago, and it can change in this moment. And this is what conscious languaging, what Bob Stevens talks about in his work. We reference the work on our website if people are interested in that.
Well, I mean, this is such a great conversation. I want to... What happens when there's things in your past that you want to change? They happened. And I also want to get to our callers in just a second, too.
Sure.
But, I mean, so, yeah, the past is a nanosecond, and there's some things, you know, yes, that minute that just happened there and at 12:31 is in the past now. But what about things in the past you want to change that happened?
Well, we can't change what has happened. We can change what it means to us, the significance that we give to it, how we feel about it. And also, it's important to honor the past and to be honest with ourselves. If life has been hard in the past, that is the way that we would acknowledge it. We say, you know, life has always been hard for me in the past. And what that does, it honestly acknowledges what has been and opens the door to a new possibility beginning right now. Because we're not saying it's hard now. We're saying it's been hard in the past.
In the past. Okay.
And I know there are people who say, you know, this is all semantics. You're splitting hairs here.
No, this is very powerful. I mean, my degrees is NLP.
You know, if any of our listeners, if any of you saw the movie Ghost with Patrick Swayze and Demi Moore, there's a beautiful example of this shift between thinking and feeling in there. There's a place where Patrick Swayze is coming to terms with the fact that he's a ghost, and he's standing on a subway platform as a ghost, non-physical being, and he's trying to kick a can the way that he did when he was a physical man. And, of course, as a ghost, he moves his foot, and it passes right through that can. And he says, okay, well, I'm gonna kick it harder, because that's our conditioning, to make that can move. And the harder he tries to kick that can, the more just nothing happens because he's a ghost. And all of a sudden, another ghost comes along. A guy comes along, and he looks at him, and he says, hey, man, it doesn't work like that here anymore. He says, you can't do it like that. You got to feel it. And as soon as Patrick Swayze began to feel that can was moving, when his foot connected with it, the can was moving all over the place, and it was a new way of being. But it was just this little subtle shift. Again, what many people might think is splitting hairs, but this is how the universe appears to work.
So
feeling from rather than thinking toward.
Now, what would we say instead of want or wish?
Choose.
Choose.
To choose to have more money. And if you want more money, to be specific about that amount. To choose to have $500 over the amount that's required to pay all the bills every month. When we say I choose, that is much, much more powerful language, and it has a different meaning to the universe than to say I want. I want. Actually, if you've ever done body testing or if our listeners have done any kind of kinesiology, when we say the word want, it drains energy from the body. The word choose feels, I mean, just listen to it right now, it feels more powerful to choose to be abundant, $500 richer at the end of every paycheck than to want more money.
Much more powerful.
Yeah.
Now, some of my wonderful skeptical listeners are asking, us to prove it. What is some of the science and the proof behind this? And I know that it exists, so I get to put that on you because you're better quoting it.
Sure. Well, it depends on what level we want to start. If we start, first of all, it is a fact. Let's start with the facts.
Okay.
It is a fact that the world is made of electrical and magnetic energy. And it is a fact that our own textbooks document that if you change either the electrical or the magnetic fields of an atom, that the atom itself will change. That is a fact. It is a fact that the human heart is the strongest electrical and magnetic generator. They are biological generators in the body. So the texts tell us if you change either the electrical or the magnetic field, you're going to change the atom. Our heart does both if it's given the conditions to do that. And to give it those conditions, that is what this quality of feeling and belief is all about. Those are facts. Now, it's a fact that there's a conversation between our heart and our brain. Every moment of every day, it's happening with all of our listeners right now. Their heart is sending a signal to their brain, and the quality of that signal tells their brain to either flood their bodies with life-affirming or life-denying chemistry. High levels of DHEA, for example, the life-affirming hormone, the precursor to other hormones, high levels of immune response, greater cognitive abilities, coherent rhythms in their heart. All of that are coming if the signals are what we would call positive signals of peace, compassion, gratitude, appreciation. In the presence of anger, hate, jealousy, rage, frustration, it's a different kind of signal, sending a completely different kind of chemistry into the body. Now, and I'm not saying that there's anything wrong or unhealthy with anger, hate, jealousy, rage, short-term. Where we get into problems is long-term unresolved anger, hate, jealousy, rage. So
right.
Those are facts.
Okay.
It is a fact that when we send life-affirming feelings from our heart to our brain, that our brain will translate that into the healing of the bodies. And this is the placebo effect that is very well documented in the open literature. We talk about it even on the cellular level that we talked about early in the program. There's also the reverse of that called the nocebo effect. When we believe that something will hurt us, it will. And this is very well documented in the book as well. People that believe, for example, that their life will end on a certain year. Talk about the story of a man who lived all of his life. He knew he would die at 75 years of age because his father did and his father's brother did. And it helped him to structure his life. He knew if he only had 75 years, he'd have so many years for family, so many years for career.
I've heard that every one of us knows our death date. If you ask yourself right now, you probably could pull a number up that you are going to die at, and it's the subconscious that knows that. I never knew this, like the real science behind it.
Well, this is what we now know, is there is no scientific reason for the body to stop working after only 100 years. Even the reasons that we used to believe were valid. Every organ, Lisa, every organ in the body, even the organs that we were told could not reproduce their own cells, are now documented is reproducing their own cells. Heart tissue can reproduce itself. Spinal cord tissue can reproduce itself. Brain tissue can reproduce itself if the tissues are given the right conditions. And part of those conditions are the quality of the feeling and the signals coming from the heart to the brain. All of us have stem cells. We have them all our lives. They're waiting for the instructions to tell them what to do.
Wow.
And those come from the same thing. So all of this is fact inside the body, and where our book now is taking this is that physicists are documenting similar effects beyond the body when many people get together and feel the feeling of peace in their hearts in a way that they've been trained and documented actually works. So we really know something is happening here.
No, let me
That peace is felt in a broad geographic area in the Middle East, for example, in the studies done in 1988.
Oh, right, in the Global Coherence Project, which you've got coming
absolutely.
Up.
Now, absolutely.
Can it come from the brain to the heart? Can it be the reverse?
It's a two-way conversation. In the slides that we show in the live presentations, I'll show a cross-section of the human body, heart and a brain, and there's an arrow between the two, or a line that has an arrow on both ends. Our heart sends a signal to the brain, and based on that conversation, the brain releases chemistry in the body. The brain, if we're thinking about something that's frightening to us, or we perceive a frightening condition, our brain is sending the signals to our heart that says, you know, fight or flight. And then the heart turns around and sends back the signal that says, you know, lots of cortisol, shut down blood to the extremities, pulled all into the core, and this person, you know, is got to be ready for fight or flight. So, yeah, it's a two-way conversation. This is a very different way.
So the
I was trained as a scientist. This is a very different way of looking at our world.
Absolutely.
But what's happening, and the reason it's so important in the greater context for all of this, Lisa, is that you and I and all of our listeners, we are living a generation unlike any other in recorded human history, because this is the first generation where we have been faced with so many different situations, scenarios that threaten our very survival as a civilization and as a species, not just one or two, but multiple, five or six at least, that have been identified by the experts. We're facing them all at the same time, and the only way we're going to solve the threats to our way of life, to civilization, to our species, is to think differently about ourselves and our relationship to the world. And all of this boils down, in the introduction to the book, I identify two false assumptions that modern science is based upon, and this is where all of this brings it all back home. Two false assumptions. One false assumption is that the space between things is empty, that the universe is about 96% empty space.
Mm.
And the second false assumption is that our inner experiences of thought, feeling, emotion, and belief have no effect on the world beyond our bodies. What we now know is both of those assumptions are absolutely false.
You know, go into the second one for a second. The first one, from a quantum physicist's point of view, the space between two things, it has previously been defined as being empty.
Absolutely. And now we know there's a field of energy that connects everything, that's made of what we would call unconventional energy. It might be dark matter. It might be dark energy. 4% is physical matter. But the bottom line is there's no empty space. There's something everywhere.
The simple radio wave explains that. And by the way, my guest is Greg Braden. A lot of people are saying, who is this?
Who is this guy?
Gregg Braden.com. In the book we're talking about, one of his books is The Spontaneous Healing of Belief. Okay, so now the second one that you say that again.
The second false assumption is that our inner experiences have no effect upon this field. And now we know, and it is a scientific fact, that our inner experiences, thought, feeling, emotion, belief, and the way that we use those have a direct effect. They influence what's happening in this field.
How do you know that?
There is no controversy as to whether or not that's happening. Here's where the controversy comes in. To what degree is it happening? Scientists acknowledge the very prestigious journal Nature, 1998, published the results of a study that was done in Israel in 98 that replicated a study that was done in England in 1909. And this is where the foundation for quantum physics really began. The studies showed that us observing, the term they use is observing our physical reality, is affecting our reality. Well, what they know is it's impossible for us to simply observe. When we look at something, we're having an expectation, we're having a feeling, we're having a belief. We cannot simply passively observe anything. And the title of the article, and this is in the journal Nature, it literally says, a quantum theory confirmed, observation affects reality. So we know that. And there's not much controversy that it happens. The controversy is to what degree. And the answer as to what degree is determined by how well we learn to hone and focus the language of our hearts upon our lives, our bodies, or the world beyond our bodies. And I think this is what is changing everything, and I think that's what our time in history is all about, to get through, to survive what we've created in the world around us. We've got to change the way we see ourselves in that world.
That world is what is, I mean, in the bigger picture of things, there's a report this morning on NPR about the danger of famines, and that there's some, I think 40% of the world is in danger now and poverty stricken. I mean, that is a large amount of this world who is in, as you said, our the survival is in jeopardy. Strongly.
Absolutely, and I think this is what makes everything we're talking about here relevant. There was a panel that was convened in the year 2005, the first time of engineers, scientists, spiritual leaders, religious leaders, all over the world, many different traditions. They all came together, and the bottom line, they were asked a question, that, you know, what's up? Something obviously is different in the world today. What makes our time in history so different? Why do people feel like something's about to happen? And what is it, this underlying low-level tension that we all seem to feel, that something is happening, but we can't quite put our finger on it? And the panel, the results of this panel and the symposium were so powerful that Scientific American, the little journal that you see in the airport newsstands, published a special edition in 2005, and the title was Crossroads for Planet Earth. And in that edition, they identified six different scenarios that are happening right now. They said any one of these, if it goes unchecked, could forever end life as we know it, civilization, possibly our species. And what makes our time so different, as we said earlier, is that all six are happening at the same time, and we've got just a few years to figure it out before they really begin to take their toll.
My goodness.
So it's interesting. Okay. It's almost as if we've created a situation in the world that pushes us to the edge of who we believe we are, to redefine our relationship to the world to survive what we've created. Isn't that interesting?
Well, you did the same thing with your tumor, didn't
I
you, my friend?
So. I guess so.
It's a microcosm, macrocosm thing. Now, the idea of this the spontaneous healing of belief is that in here there are the book by Greg Braden. There's 31 codes that you can. Mm-hmm. They're belief codes that you can read and reprogram your brain. It's just like entering a code into a computer. Is that right?
More or less. The bottom line is that we live our lives, Lisa, based on what we believe. And I think most people will agree with that. And when I began to understand as a scientist, I said, okay, if we live our lives based on what we believe, where do our beliefs come from? And what I found was that they come from other people. They come from science and history and culture and family, religion. And my next question was, well, what if they're wrong? What if we're living within a false limit of a much greater experience in life? What would it take to change that? And what I found is that people are willing to change their beliefs if they're given a good reason to do so. The ancients used miracles to change a belief. When somebody saw something that told them there was another possibility, they shifted their belief system. Today we use science to do the same thing. And in the book, I try to do both. I use science to explain the miracles and miracles to give us the examples. And the whole idea is that when we can embrace what those 31 principles are saying to us in our personal as well as our collective lives, if we can accept what our own science is showing us and what our most cherished spiritual and religious traditions have always said in another language, then the belief changes automatically. It's not like we have to go in and really work at changing our beliefs. I think it's just a matter of being shown what is and what we've discovered so that we can incorporate that into what we already know, and then it makes perfect sense to shift our belief systems.
Hmm. Yeah, I think that it does, and if we could have more and more people start to shift belief systems, then that can make a bigger shift worldwide. But okay,
I think where we get into trouble is when someone says when we feel that we're commanded to change our beliefs. I know I don't respond well to that, but if I am led through the facts and through the discoveries to a place where everything that I believed about a topic or a subject, where I see where it's been incomplete, not that it's wrong, it's just incomplete, and I can see a reason to think about things differently and fill in those missing pieces, then I'm happy to do that. It's almost an automatic thing.
Hmm. Well, let me ask you, is this an elitist conversation? Is this something that is reserved for the few that could really grasp this? I mean, if you take this concept into a third world country, they're just trying to survive.
Well, it depends on where we are.
Or not even a third world country, in this country, in certain areas.
It depends on where we are. I mean, we have been in third world countries, like what people would consider third world countries, like little villages in the Andes Mountains of Bolivia and Peru, and in very poor areas of Nepal, and certainly on the Tibetan Plateau. And these are principles that they begin with. This is what they base their beliefs upon. If we're talking about what's happening in Rwanda right now or somewhere like that, you're absolutely right. Those people, they're surviving minute to minute.
Right, exactly.
And the beauty is, and I don't know how much time we're going to have to get into this, but the
it's
beauty
worth
is
getting
not,
into, though. It is definitely worth
not
it.
Not everyone has to embrace the principles to benefit from a relatively few number of people embracing these experiences. And the reason for that is because we are all connected through this field. So one of the new discoveries is that there is a layer of the atmosphere in the ionosphere that pulses electrically in the same range of frequencies that our heart does when it is in this optimum conversation with our brain. The term is called coherence. When our brain and our heart are having this conversation, and it's an optimum conversation, what we say is there's a high degree of coherence, and it can be measured electrically. It's actually 0.1 hertz, 0.1 cycles per second. And we now know that there's a layer of the atmosphere, a part of the ionosphere, that pulses in that same range. In other words, we're tuned to a layer of the atmosphere, and that layer of the atmosphere is tuned to us. Every human is tuned to that layer of the atmosphere. So there is a project that is happening now. You can go to our homepage on our website, and there's a button you can click to learn more about it.
The website, by the way, is Greg Braden.com. This is the Global Coherence Project.
That's exactly what it is. It's a Global Coherence Project. It's piloted by the Institute of Heart Math. We've talked about in your program many times. Mm-hmm. I think you've had some heart math folks
yes.
on.
Absolutely. They're doing amazing things at that institute.
They are. They've invited me. In the interest of transparency, I'm on the board of advisors for this new project called the Global Coherence Project. The bottom line is that when we train enough people to feel that coherence, and there are ways now to determine when we are actually in that coherence. There's not guesswork. When we train enough people, they're trying to train 100,000 people to create that coherence between their hearts and their minds, you can actually measure it with satellites in this layer of the atmosphere. In this project, when it is up and running, we'll be able to log on to a website and actually see this happen real time. And the net result is that everyone benefits, because when there is coherence in that field, we are all tuned to that field, and in coherence, our hearts are more efficient, we think better, we solve problems better, we're healthier beings in the presence of that coherence rather than the chaos of anger and fear and frustration. And this is very ambitious. It's a science-based initiative, and to my awareness, it's the first time there's ever been a science-based initiative where we are speaking to a layer of the atmosphere and measuring the atmosphere's response to our conversation.
It's fascinating. Yeah, I was going to write one of my papers on it, but it wound up being more of a consciousness project rather than a psychic phenomenon, which is what my paper was on. But there's like a gadget that you have to get that hooks up to that random. The computer terminal, right?
Well, there technology is available through HeartMath, either software that can be purchased for an existing computer or a handheld device about the size of a cell phone called EM Wave, that hooks up to your human body through a sensor, and it takes the guesswork out of whether or not we are in that coherent state. In other words, when we are feeling the right feelings. The software will tell us that, and then we learn more of the right kinds of things to feel, and the feelings that don't serve us, we can stop doing them.
So that's
and,
a frequency.
And the thing about the gadgets is once you learn that, then you can give it to somebody else. You don't need to be you know, to use the gadget as a crutch. It's simply a tool to help us know when we're in that right space.
Wow, that is neat. I mean, it's really, it's exciting to be a part of that experiment. Anyway, what does this do? Is it registers frequency in the person holding it?
Well, it was made. It actually looks like something that comes from another world.
Yeah, I saw this like a ball. It looks like the size of an orange.
Well, the reason I say that is because if you didn't know what it was doing, you would have no clue because there's no writing. There are no dials.
Oh.
There are no numbers. There are LED lights,
right,
that in certain frequencies that it picks up from the human body, certain experiences, will correlate those to certain lights. So it's very intuitive. I mean, kids love this, young children, because there's nothing technical or you know, really high-tech looking about it, except that it's so high-tech, there's no numbers.
But it's like a handheld EEG device, too.
It is. It is. It's about the size of a cell phone. And in all honesty, the project is maybe a little premature. They're okay if I talk about it, but the project is, it will launch it later this summer. So you can go to my website on the homepage. Halfway down, there's a button that says you can learn more about global coherence. And there's a little slideshow they'll take you through, and they'll talk about...
Yeah, that's where I learned about it.
How to be on board with this and when everything...
It's fascinating.
So we don't want to inundate them right now with tons of...
No, that's okay. We just have a minute left, so I wanted to talk about... I mean, and you have... first of all, the name of Greg Braden's new book is The Spontaneous Healing of Belief. He also has a wonderful DVD out called The Science of Miracles. You're in Louise Hay's DVD, You Can Heal Your Life, The Moses Code you're in. You're all over the place, Greg. It's just awesome to see you.
How did that happen? You know, the book was released yesterday. It was number 2 on Amazon and Barnes & Noble both. And,
congratulations. Very
and
nice.
I think we'll see it on the New York Times list in about 2 weeks.
We better, especially after this show.
Well, I just want to thank everyone for the support and you for supporting our work so well. And
absolutely.
It tells me, Lisa, I think we're finding a language that's meaningful to people that empowers them to see themselves differently in our world.
Let's keep with it, Greg. We'll just keep getting the word out there for you. And
all
you
right.
Too. Well, thank you so much. I love you. You're wonderful.
Thank you so much. God bless. Thanks for being such a gracious host today.
All right. And thanks for being a great guest. Until next time, while I'm committed to bringing you the clearest information possible, in the end, I always encourage you to listen to your own truth. I'd like to thank my producers, Gina Salvati, Tanya Jenkins, Nadia, engineer extraordinaire at KPFK, and... Greg Braden, my guest. And that's it for me today. I will talk with you next week. And this is